Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Writership Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about love stories and the lovers meet scene. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Clark Chamberlain from the Book Editor Show. To learn more about the podcast, visit writership.com/podcast.
And as you know, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Author Marketing Club, home of the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber Tool. You know you need high-quality reviews for your book, so you should use the AMC Reviewer Grabber Tool to quickly and easily locate reviewers that are ready, willing, and able to review your books for you. Become a premium member of AMC now by visiting www.authormarketingclub.com and get instant access to this tool and more.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, Leslie. Did you say episode 97?
I did say episode 97.
I can't believe that. So three more and it'll be episode 100.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. It's very exciting.
How's that feel?
It feels good. It feels good. I'm excited. It's, when we started this, it was kind of, let's see how it goes and if mm-hmm. people find it valuable. And we've gotten some really amazing feedback because we've been contacting the people who submitted to the podcast in the past and what they've gotten out of it. And so that's been really, really wonderful. And we have something special planned for episode 100.
Tell me about it.
Well, okay, so... I love how we're doing this. So we're going to have a Q&A as part of the episode. So if there is something, you have a burning question that you want to ask Clark and me, then you can go head over to www.writership.com/ask and leave your question. I don't know. Depending on how many we get, we may not be able to answer them all on the air, but we will do our best and try to get you the answer to your burning questions about writing, editing, and those sorts of things. The sorts of things we cover. Don't ask me about physics because, I could make something up. I could give you a fictional answer, but it wouldn't necessarily help you. But check that out at writership.com/ask.
That'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Do you have a quote for us?
Oh, yes, I do. And it's from your favorite guy in the world.
My favorite guy in the world.
Uh-huh, Sean Coyne. And he says, but the love story is the long-term mother of all genres. It's not just about how to survive today. It's about how to last a lifetime and even how to gain a measure of immortality. Good old Marcus Aurelius has a measure of immortality, doesn't he? His work still resonates today, probably far more than it did in his own lifetime. Love story is the structure that instructs us on how to discover the meaning of our existence, both as individuals and as atomic particles that bump into one another in a complex action and reaction that comprises the human collective unconsciousness. Don't forget that Marcus Aurelius is still bumping around in that soup today, even though he left Earth 1,836 years ago. And we think Cal Ripken's Iron Man drink is something.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. Okay. But getting serious, it's so interesting because at the workshop, we listened to Sean talk about Pride and Prejudice and he did the story mm-hmm. grid on that. And it was so interesting to see the depth of romance and love stories in general and how important they are. And even if you're not writing in the, romance genre specifically, it's a really great subplot to include because people just love that stuff. And it's all about connection, right? Which everybody needs.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it's one of the base emotions that you can pretty much say hands down that everybody, you know, who's over the age of 16 has gone through some sort of love type experience, you know, broken heart, good love, bad love, something in there, though, like that they understand it and it's a good emotions to play with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent point. Really. So, ooh. Okay. So good. Good stuff. We have a love story to talk about today. Mm-hmm. The beginning of The Pickup by Allison Temple. This is an LGBT romance. The word count is 87,000. And we have the first chapter of that story, which Clark is going to read for us.
Yes, let us begin. Chapter 1. When the third car hit the puddle and splashed cold brown water over his ankles, he gave up trying to dodge it. "Hi, Mr. Hathaway." Adam Hathaway gritted his teeth and pasted on a smile for the woman who had pulled up in front of the school's loading zone in her German station wagon. "Hello, Mrs. King," he said. He glanced at the cars lining up behind her, waiting their turn to collect their children from school. Mrs. King hurried around the car to open the rear door and loaded her son in the back. When she turned again, she smiled at Adam broadly and handed him a plate covered in aluminum foil. "The soccer club is having a bake sale, but I made too many. I thought you might like them." Adam took the plate and felt his smile stretch another quarter inch. Mrs. King flushed a little. He didn't tell her that whatever was under the foil would be in the staff room table as soon as he could go back inside, just like the zucchini loaf the week before and the gluten-free cookies the week before that. "You shouldn't have," he said. It seemed polite enough. He hoped she'd take the hint. Her face flushed a little more. "Oh, it's no trouble. I wanted to." Behind her, children's voices asked when they were leaving. Adam glanced up, the line of cars were backing out onto the street. "I mean," Mrs. King seemed to understand that she was holding things up. "I was going to anyway. Everyone loves my brownies, and the way to a man's heart is through his..." Her eyes went wide as she bit her lip. Adam maintained his bland smile and let her collect herself. She ducked away, an awkward half-shrug, half-curtsy, and slammed the station wagon door shut. She averted her eyes as she darted around the front of her car and drove away. The next car rolled forward, and Adam remembered to avoid the puddle. No one had told him about the perils of pickup duty when he had been in teacher's college. They had talked about the psychology of learning and how to engage young minds. No one had told him about the importance of rubber boots in the spring or what to do when the soccer moms descended on him. "Hi, Mr. Hathaway," another woman waved as she loaded kids into her minivan. He didn't recognize her, not one of his regulars then. Mrs. King had been doing her baked goods routine for several months, and he was pretty sure Sophia Townsend's mom memorized the schedule. She was always the first one in line to pick up her daughter on the afternoons that Adam supervised. She always seemed to need to speak to him about something, Sophia's last math test, the upcoming PTA meeting, whether or not he thought Sophia was too young to take up the violin. Adam stayed polite, and under no circumstances did he ever suggest that Sophia's mom call him or arrange a meeting with him after school hours to discuss further. Jaden Tucker's mom was the most direct and flat out asked him if he wanted to go out on a date sometime. He tried the obvious out, which was that teachers getting involved in a relationship with their students' parents was probably not a good idea. She purred that the school year was nearly over and she was a patient woman. He did not take the other obvious out, which would have been to tell her that he was gay, because that was none of her business. On a Thursday afternoon late in spring, Adam stood in front of the school as the last van pulled out of the parking lot. It was raining, his shoes were soaked through, his socks squished uncomfortably, and his pants were wet from the knees down. All he wanted to do was go inside, pack up his work, and go home to his apartment and his TV. A flash of yellow caught his eyes as he turned. It was Caroline Fennell, covered in a bright yellow poncho. She sat on one of the low concrete planters by the front door of the school. She wore red rain boots, made to look like fire trucks. "Hey, Caroline," he said, walking towards her. Caroline was new in his class. She had only been with him a few weeks. It was odd for someone to enroll their child so late in the school year, but the principal had shrugged, said the family had just moved to Red Creek, and her father wanted to get her settled and socialized as quickly as possible. Caroline smiled as Adam approached. She was always smiling, as if she were delighted with everything the first grade had to offer. Caroline stood out in his class in many ways. The first thing was her name. In a sea of Sophias, Emmas, and Isabellas, Caroline's name seemed less trendy. Her look stood out, too. Most of the kids in his class looked like they walked off the set of a Gap Kids commercial. All khakis, pinstripes, checks, and polo shirts. Caroline came to school most days in brightly printed leggings and t-shirts for bands and comic books she wasn't old enough to even know about. "Hi, Mr. Hathaway," she said. "Is your mom late?" he asked. She frowned a little. "My mom's in heaven." She said it like heaven was down the street next to the library. Adam's stomach knotted. He cursed that the principal hadn't deemed fit to share that detail with him when she'd dropped Caroline off in his class. "Your dad, then?" he said. Caroline shrugged. Adam shifted and tried to ignore the squish of soggy socks. "Do you want to come inside and wait while it's dry?" Hopefully, one of the administrators would still be in the office and he could leave Caroline with them to sort out where her father was. Caroline shrugged again and didn't move. Adam opened his mouth to ask if there was someone they could call when Caroline straightened and looked beyond him. He turned to see yet another Range Rover pulling in front of the school. It stopped when it was opposite them. The driver's side door opened, but instead of a frazzled mom, a young man appeared. He was dressed in skinny jeans and a worn wool coat unbuttoned down the front. Despite the rain, he had a pair of sunglasses perched on top of a head of hair that was too perfectly disarrayed to be accidental. A babysitter, maybe? Or a nanny? He had a cell phone earpiece clipped over one ear, which, in Adam's opinion, was a sure sign of chronic douchebaggery. "Daddy!" Caroline ran toward the man, rubber boots squeaking as she went. Not the nanny, then. Maybe he was older than he looked. "Hey, Jellybean!" The man scooped her up and swung her in a circle. She giggled. Adam hunched under his umbrella. Caroline's father smiled at his daughter with an affection that Adam didn't always see in the harried soccer mom brigade. He also noticed that the other man had the same brown eyes as his daughter, and they were looking right at him. "Hi." The man shifted as Caroline against one hip. "Daddy, this is Mr. Hathaway," Caroline said. Her father's eyebrows lifted. "Your teacher?" he asked. Caroline nodded and then buried her head between his neck and shoulder. His face lit with an easy grin. "Hi," he said again, reaching out his free hand to shake Adam's. "I'm Kyle, Caroline's dad." His handshake was firm, his palm warm even in the clammy weather. "I meant to stop in and introduce myself earlier and make sure that the bean here wasn't giving you too much trouble." He hitched her up against his side and she giggled. "But we've been so busy getting settled and I figured you'd call if there was a problem, and Bean says she's making friends, so I..." "You're late, Mr. Fennell," Adam said.
Ouch.
I know.
I think that's a great line for ending this scene. I don't know if the chapter continues after that, but I love that line. And there's another line, "Oh, the perils of pickup duty."
Oh, yeah.
That's just perfect. It's really good.
I know. And that's one thing with this. It just so reminded me, because I go pick up my son from his school and you're just like, oh, why is that person getting out of their car? What's going on? I just want to get my kid and go. So seeing it from the other side is fun for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to open the story, mm-hmm. not just because it's a, you know, good setup for the, because we have the parent of a student and a teacher as the love interests in the story, but it's just really, it's a rich setting for mm-hmm. for other stories, I think, to open to, and I just or open or be included. I think it's a great setup for conflict.
Yeah, for conflict there for sure, you know, because it sounds like they're going to get off to a rocky start here right away. And probably just because it's raining outside, you know, I mean, like, just wants to get inside. And here's this last dad, you know, who hasn't come to pick up his kid yet. So that definitely should add a lot of that little tension right up front, you know, which romances are so much fun because the whole purpose is to keep them divided as for as long as you can and cause all kinds of issues and problems coming up that sometimes are created out of, you know, like misunderstandings and such, and then being able to get them together in the end. So that I can already see that there's a ton of stuff here that's happening. You know, probably the size of the town, there's definitely a reason why he's not telling the women that are trying to get him to go out on a date that he's gay, you know. So maybe you've got a town that's got some backward ideas going on here, or, you know, and you've got the teacher-student relationship with the parent that he's already talked about. It's not a good idea. So there's all this stuff that's already here, and it looks like it's going to be a great setup for what's to come.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I was looking at this at first and trying to, because the author said LGBT romance. So this is, which I wanted to point out, is different from what's called, typically called gay fiction. In this feels like a straight up romance, you know, a courtship romance where while we have the somewhat non-traditional element in mainstream of the gay protagonist, that it still follows, it still hits all of, ticks the boxes, I should say, of the romance and the a great opening, because mm-hmm. We have, as you say, all the potential for romantic conflict with extra things because of the difficulties of their, you know, of their positions as, you know, the father of a student and the teacher. And we also have this great lovers meet scene, which, you know, usually happens early in the story, not always the first scene, but we have this, you know, romantic conflict that's bubbling up. And so it's a really good setup, as I said, we've mentioned, but what the point I was trying to make is that gay fiction is more akin to chick lit. So it, you know, chick lit is about, you know, what's it like to be a woman in contemporary society? And gay fiction is about, you know, what's it like to be a gay person in contemporary society? Whereas this, we have, you know, obviously we'll have elements of what it's like to be gay. We certainly see that in this scene. But the main event is the romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an important distinction. When you start looking at writing a book and you're trying to figure out where it fits in, is to actually to do a lot of heavy digging, you know, to get down into finding the exact genre that it fits in, to make sure that you're reading those types of books, that you're understanding what that audience wants, and how to structure the story the right way.
Yeah, definitely. Because we don't, you know, I mean, the audience, even if they don't know it, they are expecting certain things to happen. Certain things, like, you know, this lovers meet scene is critical. And I think the author does a great job with this. For the most part, I think we have, obviously, it's early in the scene. It's not the cliched kind of, oh, two people bump into each other mm-hmm. on the sidewalk or that kind of thing. You have a hint of romantic conflict and tension, certainly, in here already. And I would say that that my biggest concern about it is that I want a bigger internal reaction from Adam mm-hmm. when, you know, because at the end he has that great line, and it's not even like, it was so funny about it, it's so subtle, because you could say it 20 different ways, you're late, Mr. Fennell, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be that powerful, but it is. And it would be even more powerful, I think, if we knew kind of what was going on. Because Adam seems, even though he's annoyed, even though he just wants to get home, he didn't seem really highly irritated.
Right. He's very hospitable, even under duress.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to make sure that everyone feels good and their smiles, and, you know, he panders to all their needs type of thing. And he's done a really good job through this, you know, of revealing what he's thinking and feeling as well. And I felt the same way when I came to the end of this. I was like, we've had all this information from him on the inside, of knowing what's happening and what he's thinking, really. Mm-hmm. And we get this one and we don't. You know, we don't know why, what it is that's there.
Yeah. There's one hint in that he said that the earpiece was a sure sign of chronic douchebaggery. So we have that, but even that doesn't feel like enough for him to be so short with Kyle there in that last line. And so I think that if we were to see inside his mind and he would be having thoughts or physical reactions, something that shows that, you know, that not only that he, you know, we get a hint that Kyle is attractive and that Adam is, you know, finds him attractive, but if we could just dial it up a little bit there, that it would make that even more powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the other things that I saw in this setup, which I think would be really helpful, is getting more of a setting. I mean, we know that there's a lot of people here that have money. Like, you know, we're talking about kids looking like they come off of an ad. You know, we've got Range Rovers pulling up. We've got, you know, there's a lot of money here. So it feels like it's probably not like a really tiny town. I mean, it must have some size to it. Mm-hmm. But getting into the setting of why, you know, we come back to this one where the woman had asked him out and he made up an excuse, you know, and not giving her the straight answer. Although he said, because it was none of her business, certainly that's a valid deal. But why, you know, why is that something to hold back and not be honest about who you are? And so something that could be as simple as seeing bumper stickers that you know, say something that would be considered maybe anti-gay or, you know, backwards thinking type of stuff could be a way in the setting. So you wouldn't have to really do much and it's already there. Mm-hmm. And not that he wouldn't have to inner monologue about how the town is or something like that.
Right.
Just little things to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great suggestion. Just like a bumper sticker or an offhand comment even would be,
like from one of the moms, you know, giving him an offhand comment, talking about someone else, you know, and because she just thinks that he's going to be into her at some point in time. So anyway, like that kind of stuff would be a perfect small little way to maybe give him a reason to not be so forthcoming about who he is.
Yeah, and that'll be an interesting, it would be interesting to see how that does unfold in the rest of the story, because clearly he's being, and absolutely, it isn't anybody's business. Like, I could totally see a teacher, whether gay or straight, wanting to keep their private life private.
Private, yeah.
You know, so that's absolutely true. But here we have kind of, it's almost like, you know, there's an additional element or layer to it because he's gay, that it makes it, you know, that it is a little more intriguing, it seems, for the story. So revealing a little bit of that, his trepidation, or if it simply is just that, you know, that he's a very private person, that could be.
Yeah. And that he's willing to continue doing this day after day, you know, fending off the women.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that he can keep his privacy private.
Right. The end of the school year is coming, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's such a great line, too. It's a great setup. So I was thinking, was there other. Looking at these notes. Yeah. I think this is. I really like this, I had one copy editing suggestion other than the little ones that we put in line, and that's to be mindful of sentence starts. There are a lot that start with a name or he or she, and it's that same structure over and over again. And so I would just recommend shaking that up a little, varying it so that it can sound monotonous when you have the same type of sentence start over and over again. And so it's something you want to be mindful of.
There's a lot of really good stuff in here. So it's one of these ones that we've had a couple of recently that it's not a ton to talk about because there's not a ton to fix.
Right. It's just some tweaks that'll make it really strong. And it's so fun. We haven't had a romance in a very long time. I can't remember the last one. And so it's fun to have this one that really does a great job of the setup. So.
Yeah, I really liked it. Yeah. Would you maybe have an editorial mission that could go along with this?
It just so happens that I do.
Oh, awesome.
So this is the Lovers Meet editorial mission. We want you to review the scene in your story where your lovers first meet. And this is whether you're doing a full-on romance or if you just have romance as a subplot in your story. And, because as we said, even if your main genre isn't romance, you can still use the Lovers Meet scene to set up a love story or the subplot and set that relationship going. So, and I think too that this works for any relationship where you have, like co-founders of a business, partners in crime, best buddies, whatever, that the Lovers Meet scene is a really great one to have in your pocket to use for. Even if you don't, as I said, even if you don't include it in your story, it's good for you to know how two pivotal characters who have a strong relationship met. So write the scene where they meet, even if you don't include it in your story. It'll provide insight into how they relate to one another. And consider characteristic moments for both lovers, friends, colleagues. The tension that's created by the awkwardness or hostility when they meet and how to set up potential conflict in the relationship, given their strengths and flaws and the roles that they play in relation to one another and with other people. And then think about how to make this moment memorable for both. And if you get stuck, I really recommend using Pride and Prejudice as a model because the Lovers Meet scene in that is so, so good. And you can't, as I said, it applies whether you're full on romance or not. So check out that scene where Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy meet for the first time and the way he disses her and the way she talks about him. And you'll have a great model for setting up that scene for yourself. And just as a reminder, you can go to writership.com/episodes to sign up and get the editorial missions delivered right to your inbox. If you usually listen to the podcast while you're on the move, this is a great solution. So check that out again. And don't forget to submit your questions for our 100th episode Q&A at writership.com/ask.
Now, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at the Author Marketing Club, which you can find at www.authormarketingclub.com. Don't forget, when you become a premium member today, you'll gain access to the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool.
And finally, if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. If you want to have your 5 pages review, please visit writership.com/submissions. And finally, be sure to check out the Book Editor Show, which Clark hosts with Peter Turley. That's it for episode 97. We'll see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.